You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Yeah, and it's real weird because we're recording during the day on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Which is...
bizarre.
Never.
We don't sound happens. Like we're absolutely exhausted and ready for bed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bright in here. It's warm outside.
Yeah.
Like it's feeling very odd. I'm not like absolutely dead tired from working all day. So
this is weird.
It's weird.
It's good new, weird. It's different. We're here for it.
We love it.
We love it.
All right. Well, let's jump into the news of today and let's talk about, I know you and I both have this. It's really the only thing I have because my week has been bananas. And
so also, busy.
There's so much on this topic. I mean, it's kind of the only thing I've been thinking about anyway.
Right. It's kind of all over social media. I think for a lot of us that like follow those types of accounts, like a lot of, you know, now this politics and things like that are sharing a lot of videos of what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much seeing it everywhere.
Even today I was at a hotel. I was meeting somebody, like I had a meeting this morning and I was sitting in the hotel lobby and it was on, like it was on CNN, no sound. So
yeah, and that's the other thing too, is that it's like ongoing. So because we are recording this on Wednesday morning, we're not going to have the most up-to-date information about what's happening with the hearing for the Supreme Court possible new justice, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. But we will give you what we know so far and what is kind of big in that topic at the moment.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about President Biden's Supreme Court nominee, Ketanji Brown Jackson. She is on track to become the first Black woman to sit on the Supreme Court. She is extremely qualified for the job, having been a former U.S. District Court judge for 8 years and a member of the U.S. Sentencing Commission and newly appointed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. She has also been through three separate Senate confirmation proceedings since 2010. She is actually more highly qualified than at least four of the judges who are currently sitting on the bench.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't doubt that. She was also, I believe, a defense attorney, if I remember hearing that correctly. And then I believe she also worked for the district attorney or the prosecutor. There was some other office that she worked for as well, and something that, you know, Democrats are very much applauding her for is that she started from, you know, being a defense attorney all the way to where she is now and just kind of working her way up those ranks throughout the years.
Not just a defense attorney. She was a public defender, which is there hasn't been a public defender sitting on the bench since Thurgood Marshall. So that's absolutely wild.
And now tell me if I'm right. I believe the difference between like a public defender and a defense attorney would be that like a public defender is one that you're just kind of like if I were to go to court right now and I don't have a lawyer, I would be
appointed a public defender.
I wouldn't be given necessarily. I would have to hire a defense attorney.
Right.
To make it that way, a defense attorney.
Yes. You can choose a defense attorney. Usually they cost a lot of money.
Right. So a public defender is just free for the person who needs it.
Right. Right. Which I believe also that was her choice. It wasn't like she couldn't, obviously she's a very, very good lawyer and judge.
Very, very smart.
It's not as though she couldn't have been a defense attorney and made a lot of money.
No, she wanted to help the people that couldn't afford a proper defense and still have them have a good defense. And I think that's something really interesting is that like defense attorneys and public defenders can be seen as like the bad guy because they're defending the person on trial rather than, defending the person who's allegedly done something bad. You know right. what I mean? So we automatically think negatively about that person. But we don't always think about it's so vital. Every single person deserves and needs a proper defense. So having someone who truly does care be there as a public defender is so important.
Right. I mean, and also as a Black woman and a public defender, I'm sure she has seen the ways in which our society has railroaded people as
Certainly.
Well, or our legal system has railroaded people as well.
Yeah.
But, her confirmation is, before I go into everything else, like her confirmation is all but a foregone conclusion. There really isn't anything for them to attack her with, and they know it, which is right. why they are attacking things like her record as a public defender. They are saying that she was soft on crime.
Yes.
For no reason other than the fact she was a public defender. Because if you look at her record, she was very fair, it would seem.
Yeah. But it's because she was defending criminals that she's seen as being
right,
light on crime.
The vast, vast, vast majority in the reading I was doing, the vast majority of people who go on to be judges, let alone Supreme Court justices, start out as prosecutors.
Right.
So it's very rare or, maybe not very rare, but far more rare for a defense attorney, let alone a public defender, to go on to be a judge.
Certainly. I wanted to mention really quick, I think his name is Dick Durbin, but I did something on my phone and I think it's affected my iPad that if I write duck, it changes it to fuck because I was sick of it being the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now I can't write duck. It just changes it to fuck. Uh-huh. And so I'm guessing his name isn't Duck Durbin. It's Dick Durbin, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
I would assume. Yeah. I would assume it's not Duck Durbin. Yeah.
I wrote fuck Durbin, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
It's got to be Dick. Yeah.
Oh, Madigan. Introduced Jackson as a champion of the rule of the law with a long record of excellence and integrity. And the quote that they said was, "The reality is the court's members, in one respect, have never really reflected the nation they served. Mm-hmm. In its more than 230 years, the Supreme Court has had 115 justices. 108 of them have been white men. Just 2 justices have been men of color. Only 5 women have served on the court, and just 1 woman of color."
That is so upsetting. Like all of those things I knew, like as you said them,
but
I was
when
like,
you
yeah,
say
Sonia
them in
Sotomayor
a list and, like that, yes. and you break it down into those numbers, especially with that first one being 108 of that 200, or what was it? 108 of the 115 justices were white men.
Yeah.
And then breaking it down into those smaller
Only
groups.
2 men of color even.
Yes.
Which is just like that is.
You'd think that number would at least have been a little bit higher before. I don't know. All of it's upsetting.
A lot of this racist shit that's being hurled at her during this confirmation hearing, which also, by the way, can we just for a second talk about how well she is handling herself throughout
this. Oh my
gosh,
she's giving herself pep talk after pep talk, like, girl, keep your cool, get through this. When you get home, you're gonna have a vodka tonic and yell about it and you're gonna be fine, but for now, bitch, you better keep your cool.
And for the most part, I don't even think that she's really struggling with it.
No, she's a judge and a badass. She's fine. That's just how I would be.
But there was one, like, I saw Ted Cruz was showing her a book.
About babies. Being racist.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I think it was written by the same guy who wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist. And,
yeah.
But it's a children's book. And he was like, "What do you think about this book?" And the pause and the sigh that she gave before calmly, gracefully, articulately answering his question was so telling. Like, yeah. there, that silence was so loud in the pause that she took right before she addressed him.
Am I really going to answer this question right now? Yeah, she's like, he asked, are babies racist? And she was just like,
why are you asking her? Like,
no. Okay, well, this is why they're asking, because she was appointed. Hold on, let me find this. The basis for the questioning was because she is on the board of trustees for Georgetown Day School in D.C. So he's saying because she is working for like a K through 12 school, he's believing then that she would in some way have control over the curriculum, even though she's just like on a board of trustees or something like that. So that was kind of her response to that. Like, no, I do not think babies are racist. And even if I did, I don't have control over the curriculum of the school that I work at. I'm on the board of trustees. So from what I read, I believe it was on CNN, they were saying that was Ted Cruz's reason for bringing, you know, books and things into his discussion.
It's Lindsey Graham also asked her, he was like, what's your faith? Like, what faith are you? And she's like, I'm Protestant.
What does that have to do with anything?
And he said, okay, well, do you think that you could be fair to judge someone who was Catholic? And it's like, what, do we ever ask these questions of anyone else? Like, I really feel like you are grasping at straws because you know that there is no legitimate grounds to deny her being on the bench.
But they're going to bring it up because they want at least those discussion topics to be heard in this hearing for everybody that's on the other side. Like, bringing up hot button topics like critical race theory and religion and things like that are ways for the other side's ears to perk up, to be like, ooh, what's she going to say? What's she going to do? Right. Oh, was that the right answer? Should she have said this? It's setting them up for a friggin' trap.
Oh, absolutely it is. There were also, like, in her past as a public defender, she had advocated on behalf of the treatment of Guantanamo Bay detainees.
Right.
Which, by the way, if you don't know about that, please go back and listen to our 9/11 War on Terror episode, because the way that those people were treated
was horrendous and inhumane.
Horrifying. And
she should be defending them.
And absolutely she should be advocating for them to be treated like human beings. But some Republican senators, like Tom Cotton from Arizona, it led them to ask her if she ever represented a terrorist from Guantanamo Bay. She was asked several times. Like, I don't know if that was actually in this confirmation hearing or in her last Court of Appeals
hearing.
I don't know which one it was, because they have been saying racist shit for so long.
Yeah.
To her, in an effort to keep her from advancing.
Yeah.
Which is just, ain't that the way it works?
Ain't that the way it works? Well, before we go any further, should we take a really quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break and we will be right back to keep talking about Ketanji.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
Okay, so another thing that really pissed me off was that this guy, Republican Senator Josh Hawley.
Oh, yeah, from Missouri. Yeah.
From good old Keegan State.
It's, I get like hot. My chest gets hot every time I see a picture of that man. I hate him so much.
I hate him.
With just like a real, like, it feels personal.
I don't blame you. I think that we all kind of have that with our hometowns, especially if you have like...
Like you're embarrassing
positive,
us.
Right. And you have like positive memories or you want to feel like a connection to that place. And then you see it's people doing super shitty stuff. And you're like, no, ruin it.
Not all Missourians.
Right? For real. Yeah. She got out. All right. But this asshole wrote a Twitter thread about how Jackson was lenient on sentencing those convicted with child sex abuse images. This tirade was followed by debunking from CNN, The Washington Post, and even the conservative National Review, who called the thread meritless to the point of demagoguery. Did I say that word right? Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. Like, yeah. That's the thing. You're absolutely right. They're only bringing these things up because they know that they can then be used as a Fox News headline
exactly.
or talking point.
They're literally making their own headlines by asking these questions. It has no merit. Her response has nothing to do with it. The fact that they can say whatever they want and ask whatever they want, they're taking advantage
yeah,
of
they
that.
Know who,
you know?
They know that the people who want to stop hearing after that
yeah.
are going to stop hearing
exactly.
after that. They're only going to absorb that information.
Yeah.
That, like, oh, she's soft on pedophiles.
Exactly.
And, it's like,
and that is also such a hot button thing because if you think about
QAnon
and all of these things, mm-hmm. like that is their main calling card, that they are here to save the children and that they are here to fight against this cabal of pedophiles in our government. So if you're bringing up again these things that are so sensitive to so many people on the right, you're bringing up child sexual abuse,
right?
That's going to perk their ears up,
right?
No matter what her response to that is. The fact that she might have defended somebody like that in the past is a negative check on their list.
Well, and he was talking about as a judge, like not giving harsh enough sentences, and her response to that was, it's a case by case basis. So for instance, one time I had to sentence someone who was 18 who had been speaking with a federal agent to a teenage girl, and I'm not going to sentence that person the same as I would sentence, you know, a pedophile who is going after like members of his own family or is like going after multiple children.
And isn't that what being a good judge is?
Right.
Is taking a look at the facts of the case
and determining
and applying proper justice to each case.
Right. Yeah, of course. Like, why
would
those
two...
Because
then it would be obscene.
They're different circumstances.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But Hawley's whole thing was that he wrote this Twitter thread as a way to, quote unquote, warn Ketanji before his questioning on Monday to be like, this is what's like coming to you or whatever. And it's something. But the thing that absolutely boggled my mind and made me the most angry, like made my palms sweaty this morning, was reading what Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn brought up.
Oh, gosh. Her opening statement was so gross.
I mean, and again, this is just rolling out the red carpet of every hot button topic you could possibly think of. She brought up trans children competing in sports, critical race theory, and the 1619 Project, while accusing her of being a judicial activist with a secret agenda to indoctrinate children and free violent criminals.
It is so wild to me because I'm like, on the basis of what? Like, it ends up feeling very racist.
It does.
That and you would just assume, like, you're going to say all of these things to this woman on with no basis.
With
like,
no
you're
just basis. Like,
I don't know. I look at you and think you have a hidden agenda to protect sex criminals. Like, what are you talking about?
Or to, like, okay, so the 1619 Project, I didn't really know about it, so I Googled it, learned a little bit about it. So if you don't know, it's super cool.
Yeah.
So it's a journalism endeavor which reframes America's history by placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black America at the center of the United States national narrative.
Yeah.
So it kind of reframes history in a way where instead of it being very like white Eurocentric, it frames it more around the Black experience in America, which I think would be a very comprehensive way of learning history, especially since we've learned it in one way for so long. But to them, especially when we're talking about critical race theory,
it's what kickstarted this entire national conversation about critical race theory,
because
is them wanting to use that in schools.
It's about teaching an alternative narrative to American history that is so offensive to them, that bringing up that project does in their minds, and I think to a lot of other people as well, it does point to like, she's fighting for critical race theory, she's gonna be
okay, you know, it's so like my blood is gonna start boiling
because
I'm like, she is a Black woman, and myself as a mixed race person, Black person, whenever I read, because I read, you can read large portions of the 1619 Project on line if you Google it, or else you used to be able to. And when I first started reading that, it resonated with me so much, because I'm like, yes, this is my culture, this is what my family had to go through. Like,
finally
reading,
I'm understanding a bit more in other contexts, other parts of our history.
And it was powerful to me to be able to read that. She is a Black woman. Like, it's going to resonate with her as well.
And
like,
she has every right for that to resonate with her.
Yes. And for you and to say
for that
she should,
as a negative thing, I just don't understand.
It's just infuriating.
Why don't we want representation? Why don't we want to be discussing these things that make you feel uncomfortable?
Because people don't want to think of themselves or their ancestors as villains. Like, they just don't want to see it like that.
But people are so complex. Like, fucking accept that. Except the people in your life are probably shitty and doing shitty things. I've accepted that about living people in my family.
Right. I've accepted that about myself. I'm not
it
proud
doesn't
of
make
every action I've ever done in my life.
Of
like,
course not. But you have to be able to reconcile that with yourself and see what's right from wrong. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person just because you're related to somebody who did something bad.
Right.
You can't fuck it up in your head that way.
It's hard for people to dismantle this idea of America, of the America that we've always grown up to believe.
Yeah, that it could possibly change.
Right. We want to believe that America is, that we're the good guys, you know, and it's just, that's just not been the case for most of history, for most groups.
And it's not helping us to put our head in the sand and pretend that we are.
Right. I agree. Yeah. Her comments really triggered me. I was very upset.
It's nasty.
Yes.
It's just nasty. Very, very nasty.
Yes.
What
and
she's
this
saying.
Again, this woman, like, she is so calm under pressure.
She's just graceful.
And it's such an example. Again, it reminds me of when Amy Coney Barrett testified during Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing.
Right.
It's kind of like, for women, we so often have to learn how to be like polite
and
calm,
compliant.
Under pressure, and not just pressure, but under like someone who's like hurling insults at you and like attacking your character for no reason. Like, Marsha Blackburn had no reason to say those things.
No.
So very upsetting. There's also a lot of GOP senators who have been shamed already for their clearly racist comments and questions during her DC circuit nomination last summer. So a lot of those have resurfaced, some of them asking whether she'd ever participated in a riot or if she'd ever been arrested for committing a hate crime.
What?
People have been telling her to her face that she's an affirmative action pick. Like, it's just this blatant,
so hurtful
racism.
Like, this is like a woman who's like getting a really cool job. Like, can we not shit on her? Like,
historic
job.
Yes. You know, and like, it's just, why are you so scared
of
Black
people? Stop being
a fucking
bully.
You're so scared of Black people and you're so scared of women that like you are just willing to
be straight up fucking horrible.
Horrible
to their
racist
face.
Yeah. 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 And Lindsey Graham addressed that kind of where he was like, well, I think we're all numb to being called racist now. So we're just going to say whatever we feel like we need to say. And we're going to ask whatever questions we feel like we need to ask. And I'm like, okay, bro. Like, you
if
do you, I guess.
If that's the route you want to take, then there's really no arguing that. If you're totally cool with us calling you a racist, there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah.
That's but your choice.
They have no reason not to confirm her. So I would be extremely, extremely surprised if she wasn't confirmed.
Yeah, same.
So we'll see.
We shall see. Okay, so I wanted to do a little bit of a continuation off of last week's discussion on the Don't Say Gay bill, mm-hmm. and then also kind of what I brought up about the Disney company and all of that, and mm-hmm. what their response was to this bill, especially because Disney is such a major, major, major money-making device for the state of Florida.
Yeah.
They give a lot of donations to a lot of Florida politicians and things like that. And Disney employees have fucking had it. They have had enough. So,
right. Well, because Disney released that statement, right, where they were like, we don't condone this. But then...
And they're doing all of these other very performative things. Like, they're going to give us a gay kiss at some movie that's coming out
Thanks
now,
so
which I'm
much.
Like, great. Like,
okay. I mean, representation matters, of course. But like, to me, that feels like a very, it's like,
it's a Band-Aid
right,
on the problem.
It's like the summer of 2020 when we were like, okay, cool, I guess, that you're not saying master suite when you go to show an apartment anymore. But can we maybe like fix this on like a substantial, like fundamental
systemic level? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this is wonderful, but can this also trickle down into like the more important stuff? That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I don't care, keep calling it a master suite. Can we maybe get some police reform? That'd be great. Like, no, okay, that's
let's
fine.
Put that on a t-shirt. Like, oh goodness. So yeah, but the employees of Disney, of course, are not all just cishet white men, you know.
Correct,
they come from all different backgrounds, they have all different identities, they have all different life experiences, and they have had just about a fucking enough mm-hmm. of Disney having anything to do with this Don't Say Gay bill. So they planned a walkout for Tuesday morning in protest of the company, where hundreds of employees right in our backyard where you used to work, right? Up in Burbank?
Yeah, I worked at the... I don't think I signed anything. I worked for ABC, which is
but
Disney.
Isn't it the same building?
So... not where I worked. I worked on the Prospect lot, which is in Los Feliz. So
that's right.
I worked in Los Feliz, but yes, the main, like where I went to get my badge and do my orientation.
Where the big giant Mickey hat mm-hmm. is. You can see it from the freeway.
Yeah, there's
all
a big giant
kind of
Mickey hat. And
there's Mickeys all along the fences,
exactly.
All around Alameda by Providence Hospital. If you live in LA, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, and if you don't, so sorry. But yeah, Anthony sent me the video of everybody walking out, and that's
it was
what
hundreds.
You see is all the Mickey heads on
on the little tops of the fences, which I think is like a really great photo too, because it's showing like mm-hmm. this very clear image of what they're walking out on as well. It's this huge, 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 huge company. And so for the workers that were working at Disneyland California, they were also in discussion to be doing this walkout, but a lot of them felt very unsafe to do so.
Yeah.
Especially since they've been told not to wear pride or trans pride
that is
Mickey pins
fucked.
At work.
That is fucked up.
It's very fucked up.
Like how, what? Excuse you.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that I can't wear that.
Yeah. The Disney walkout Twitter page wrote, they want us to feel, quote, safe, but then sell our identities as brands and profits while preventing those same identities from existing in their own company.
Yeah. It's part of who you are. Why shouldn't you be able to wear a rainbow pin?
Exactly. And if we are now starting to celebrate these characters on screen, if you're going to be showing a gay kiss, if you're going to be telling these stories, why are you denying the people that work for you those same stories?
Right.
Why are you just complying with like what the world wants just to make yourselves look better, but really not doing anything from the inside to protect
right.
the people that work
you're
for
gonna
you.
You're going to profit off of our stories.
Yep.
Right? Like, because diversity is such a huge hot button kind of like thing right
yes.
now. So you're going to profit off of the stories of minorities and then not do anything to actually make them feel safe or protected.
That's
or
exactly
protect
right.
their rights at all. And it really sucks that, you know, as much as I always advocate for workers and, you know, will always say like, we have so much power as workers, like we are the thing that keeps this machine running, like without us, it stops. Everything right. stops, right? And I think that leveraging that power and using that power is so important. And so being able to say like, okay, we're going to organize a walkout. We're going to stop production today, right? Like, I think that's great. However, it also really sucks that workers have to put themselves in a position
in danger
to potentially lose their jobs. It shouldn't have to be like that. Like, we should be able to rely on the people in power to protect us.
And if to you're do going the right to- thing right away instead of having to put ourselves or our finances or our families in danger because we have to stand up for the right thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and having worked in a lot for a lot of different corporations and different companies, they always want to make you feel like you are in a family, right? They always want to make you feel like,
which is so toxic,
safe with them, but it's not true.
But I that is so toxic to me. I really don't vibe with that whole like we're a family, because that means that they're going to try to get away with stuff with you because
exactly.
we're like family. Family helps each other. Yes. Family does this stuff.
It doesn't go both ways.
You are an employer. You have mm-hmm. certain things that you have been expected to do with your job. Act that way. That's something I've had to learn, especially working with families in yeah. people's homes. Mm-hmm. That line is so fucking blurry, and you have to draw those boundaries for right. yourself. But I think even working in a big company, you have to realize like how fucking toxic those statements are, and realize that like, okay, but even though we want this happy, harmonious work environment, and I think that's really what we're striving for, mm-hmm. that kind of language to me is very much like, because we're like family, I can treat you a certain
way.
Well,
that's exactly it. Because that line, we're like family, only applies to you.
Yep.
Right? Like, you need to behave a certain way because you're in this family. But that
doesn't
mean...
And it's almost like, and I'm like the father and you revere to me. And I don't know.
Right.
There's just
I
all
can
this
treat
like, ugh.
You a certain... Like, it never goes back the other way.
Yes.
Right? Because, like, if you're a family and you're supposed to be respecting each other that way, then I should be able to go to you and feel comforted by you and protected by you.
Exactly.
But that's not how this works. Mm-mm. Right? Like, you're always doing the protecting for the company. That's always what ends up happening.
Exactly.
Is you're sacrificing your time, your life, your energy,
their paycheck,
right?
That's all they care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, as soon as you become a liability to them, you're no longer like family to them.
No,
you know, so just keep that in mind. You know, I really feel like Gen Z is moving in that direction. Whereas,
yeah, I
like,
don't know who we're lecturing right now, but for anybody that needs to hear that, especially, I mean, I feel like a lot of people do, especially like when you're new in the workplace. I feel
yeah.
like it's so easy to get taken advantage of or to not know what your rights are and how to set boundaries and things like that. I think it's super important. And that's why, you know, as shitty as it is that we see these people risking their jobs to make these kinds of statements, it is so important for us to continue to be voicing those things for everybody else that maybe feels like they can't voice those things.
Yeah.
Like the workers in
yeah.
Disneyland who are feeling unsafe to be who they are. Luckily, these people in Burbank were able to get up and walk out from their desks. And there were actually a few smaller walkouts before that, like during their 15-minute breaks, they would all get up and walk out and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of them. I think it's amazing what they're doing. I hope that, you know, all of their jobs are protected and their families are okay and all of that. But I really hope that continuing this discussion on this Don't Say Gay bill and the fact that it has still kind of stayed in the media, I'm hoping that it can be squashed, that this discussion can eventually end, that hopefully Disney and other major corporations will stop donating so much money to these hateful Republican senators who
yeah.
are creating these awful legislations. And so putting more responsibility on those companies, I'm always here for.
Yeah, me too. And also keep that in mind come Pride Month, whenever Disney tries to sell you something with Mickey Mouse's face on it that's covered in rainbows. Just
yeah.
know that like they're not really putting their money where their mouth is. And I say this as someone who is somewhat of a Disney adult. Like I love going to Disneyland.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. I love Disney movies. But like, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled.
Don't be fooled. Yeah. I mean, in general, I would always say that whenever you want to buy anything that's like supportive of a cause, make sure that it's actually giving back to that cause mm-hmm. in some way. I think it's really easy for us to just like buy the Pride shirt at Target instead of, you know, maybe ordering online from a company
or,
that like
yeah,
really
independent
needs it.
Seller.
Independent
yeah.
seller or somewhere where they donate a lot of money to certain causes. Like there are a lot of places out there. So you just kind of have to do your research on it and make sure that you're also, not that it's the consumer's responsibility necessarily, but it's also good to know where your money is going and things like that. And
Yeah, maybe
doing
this,
better in the world, you know?
Maybe this Pride Month, we can kind of break down for you companies and how much money they donate to anti-gay legislation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a great idea. Let's see how much money they donate in June to, like, the Trevor Project and things like that. And then let's see what they do the rest of the year. That'd be real interesting. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, I hope you all enjoyed another week's news episode. If there are any topics that you want us to discuss in the future, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on Instagram @angryneighborhoodfeminist. If you haven't checked out our merch yet, please do so. It's pretty cute. You can go to the link in our bio on our Instagram page, or the link is also in the show notes wherever you are listening to us now. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. And last but certainly not least, if you haven't done so already, the best way you can support us is by leaving us a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a quick sentence about why you enjoy the show. All right, that's all we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.